Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about David Lean's 1962 epic, Lawrence of Arabia. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Hot and dangerous.
As per usual for you. Glad that's becoming a thing. So if you guys are just joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish up with listener voicemails and emails. You guys can always call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So Tyler, I believe it is your turn for the character name game this week. What do you have in store?
Yeah, character name. I had plenty of time to think about it while watching Lawrence of Arabia. So I came up with a pretty difficult, obscure name.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Colt.
Ooh.
Carl Colt.
Okay. All right. Well, as regular listeners will know, we will return to the character name game at the very end of this podcast, and I'll try to guess.
4 hours long.
This podcast is 4 hours long? Oh,
yes.
Good God. I don't think we can sustain that kind of entertainment, but neither could Lawrence of Arabia.
A frame for frame discussion of Lawrence of Arabia.
Man, that would be ridiculous. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on.
This is where he blinked.
God, I can just see how terrible that would be. Let's move into our media consume section. This is the part of the show where we're talking about what we've been watching, any sort of events that we've been to, concerts we've attended, books we've read, whatever. So, Tyler, why don't you start us off? What have you been consuming this week?
Well, first off, I want to announce I got my Retro Duel, which is a gaming system that plays not only NES games, but Super NES games. So I'm going to be delving into some retro gaming.
Wait, is this a real thing?
Yeah, it's this little lightweight box, and you can put in NES cartridges, or you can put in Super NES cartridges, and it plays both, and the controllers look like Super Nintendo controllers. It's really cool.
How does it work? Does it plug directly into your TV, or do you have to run it through another system, or what?
No, you plug it right into your TV. It's just like any ordinary system. It's just now they've perfected the old system circuitry that you can fit it in this really small box and play both kinds of games.
Interesting. Okay.
You just have to switch from 8-bit to 16-bit to play the different games. And it's just like a regular system. You just plug it in and it turns on, and it's really cool.
Sweet. Okay.
But the media I've been consuming today, actually, I also got Capcom Classics Volume 1, which accumulates like from 1984 to 1992 their arcade games that they were putting out. Street Fighter 2's on there.
Nice.
But I played one today called Final Fight, which actually has characters that later appeared in Street Fighter, because I guess the same company owned all the all the characters. But let me give you the plot synopsis from Wikipedia. It's a pretty cool game. Final Fight is set in the fictional American metropolis of Metro City, where a former professional wrestler named Mike Hagger is elected mayor, promising to handle the city's criminal problem in his campaign. The Mad Gear Gang, the dominant criminal organization of the city, plots to bring Hagger under their control by kidnapping his daughter Jessica and using her as leverage against him. Enlisting the help of Cody, Jessica's boyfriend, and a martial arts master himself, as well as Cody's sparring partner, a ninjutsu master named Guy, Hagger opts to fight the gang instead in order to save his daughter.
Wow.
So yeah, you can play with one of the three characters I just mentioned, Cody, Guy, or Hagger. And on the Classics Collection, it's unlimited continues, so you can just hit start, and that's like you putting more money into the arcade machine. So I beat the game in like an hour. It was well worth the hour. I didn't have anything else to do, and you just go through the levels beating up on people.
So what kind of gameplay are we talking here? Is it more like River City Ransom, that kind of deal?
It's like Double Dragon, where you just go across. It's a side scroll, and you just fight the guys that pop out.
Okay.
And you keep moving on. And it's like whenever you beat that set of bad guys, it goes, keep going. It shows the arrow pointing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there aren't any cutscenes, just at the beginning and the end. But Guy's probably the best because he's fast and he has like combos. And I guess I have to go back and play with Hagger and Cody, because Hagger was real slow. Cody wasn't as fast. but I didn't figure out to like level 5 that you had like this super move that you could do constantly that just obliterates everybody.
Sounds like your type of gaming style was just finding that and then repeating that move ad nauseum for the entire rest of the game.
Like when we played Red Dead Revolver multiplayer, where I play as what was his name?
I think it was
Jack Swift. Yeah, and he had what was weird was because everybody thought it was unfair that I used this guy all the time, but it really wasn't because he's it's not like I cracked the game code to create him. It's like he's one of the possible players to use, and just because he has like 12 shots that he can rapid fire at you and kill you instantly.
Yeah, just because
make me a bad guy.
His special move is wildly better than anyone else's.
Yeah, like the Native American's move is like eagle vision with his bow and arrow. It's like, okay, yeah, that's cool if you know how to use it, but I just knew how to use Jack Swift.
Nice. Okay, so aside from like the ridiculousness of that story, which, I mean, obviously the connection of the professional wrestler to your exploits at destageddon.blogspot.com is kind of a natural attraction there. Aside from the story, what did you think of like the actual, like the game itself, you know?
Some of the players were too slow, and sometimes like I would continue constantly. Like the baddies would get hits in before I could get up off the ground, because you can't do a move while you're on the ground, and you have to get up off the ground to do a move, and they always hit me right, and I'm like tapping the butt waiting to hit them, and they always hit me before I get up off the ground, and they just stand over me
right
as I get up, and then I just die, and I'm like, son of a bitch. So I had to continue a lot, and just but every time you lose a life and come back down, like all the enemies like fly backwards as if your landing was like this energy ring that just like sent them reeling, so you get kind of a step up if you die.
Right.
But there aren't any like what was really missing was some kind of finisher move that you power up to, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like the baddies you take care of, you build up to this finishing move where you can just take everybody out off the screen, but mm-hmm. you know, it's just a fighting game, and I was entertained, so cool. it wasn't too bad.
Nice. What else have you been consuming?
I'd give it a 3.9 out of 5.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you were going to mention Justified. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we both watched the season 2 premiere of Justified. This is a TV show on FX, and I believe it's, what time is it? Come on. Is it Tuesday nights?
Maybe?
I don't remember.
9th, so it was Wednesday.
Okay, Wednesday. Yeah, check your local listings for Justified. It stars Timothy Oliphant. It's based on an Elmore Leonard short story. It's been kind of turned into one of the best shows on TV, I think. Really, really entertaining first season. Great work from Timothy Oliphant and Walton Goggins, who plays Boyd Crowder on the show. So what did you think about the season 2 premiere?
They still got it, man. They're still entertaining, even though this episode really didn't have to deal with as much the storyline that was kind of building up towards the end of season 1. Like, it was just kind of like a side thing, but it also sets up kind of the ongoing storyline for season 2, which went well.
Mm-hmm.
Freaking town of
Harlan, I think.
Harlan, yeah. The town of Harlan's so huge because I thought they went to some other place in Kentucky. But as it turned out, they were just still in Harlan. I was like, oh, wow, this doesn't look like Harlan at all. And but the freaking characters in this one were ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't want to give too much away, but,
yeah.
You know, I get kind of uncomfortable when things have to deal with, like, pedophilia and rape and stuff like that. So I was really hoping that that guy got what was coming to him.
Yeah. There's a scene at the gas station that
preferably a bullet to the head.
there's a scene at the gas station at the very end that I just thought was great. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where Raylan Givens is at the gas station, and he like the guy claims that he's stealing gas, and he just I'm not gonna give it away, but that was like one of the best parts of the episode, I thought.
That was pretty good.
For me, the season 2 premiere didn't have that feel of a real premiere, you know what I mean? Like, it felt kind of like just another episode. It didn't really have any sort of special quality to it, aside from the very beginning of the episode in which they recapped the last probably, what, 5 minutes or 3 minutes or something right. of the previous season. I mean, they kind of, you know, they took it back to Miami for a little bit, just in the very beginning, a lot of kind of wrap-up stuff, and then they just kind of moved on as if no, you know, no big deal. Okay, well, here's season two, we're just jumping right into this, which on one hand, I like the fact that they're not really making a big deal out of it, and this on the other hand, I kind of wanted a little bit more out of a premiere, you know, something to kind of separate it and maybe give a little bit more of that Boyd Raylan relationship that's so great. That's like one of the best parts of the series, but I think you know, it's clearly, like you said, you know, doing a lot of setup for this is the way season two is going to be. These are these new characters that you need to start caring about and start figuring out, you know, where their allegiances lie and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it was definitely a solid episode of Justified, I thought. I just didn't love it. It's not like one of my favorite of the series or anything.
Yeah, it was kind of like a sidestep to create this new storyline, because obviously they didn't address the ongoing characters like Boyd, Raylan's girlfriend, Raylan's ex-wife.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't really pop up until the end. Even the girlfriend didn't. I can't remember the names.
Ava,
right now.
I think.
Ava, the girlfriend. She wasn't even in the episode except at the beginning, so we don't know what the deal is with her.
Yeah.
And then the ex-wife just shows up for no reason because he called, I guess, after 3 months. And so,
who did he call?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we're automatically. And I mean, again, you know, it's weird with the FX seasons is because they premiere or they broadcast within like 3 months in the spring.
Yeah.
Then there's almost an entire year until the next season starts. And so I think it might have been that way because, you know, a lot of people may have not seen the last few episodes last season or don't remember.
Yeah.
The last
oh,
episodes.
Yeah.
So maybe they're like, okay, here's a story that will get you familiar again with how Justified works. And then they might start addressing the larger storyline and later season two episodes.
Sure. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's pretty right on. Or let's hope, anyway.
Yeah, because I retain a lot of information, but sometimes, you know, you just forget that things happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I appreciate them. You know, like you said, FX especially, it does feel like there's a hell of a long time in between the season finale and the season premiere. So, yeah, I did.
It's Always Sunny is okay because most episodes are...
Yeah, kind of one-offs, yeah.
Yeah, Justified and Archer, these kinds of shows where they have, like, ongoing
the series
stories that bleed out of the seasons are kind of disconcerting.
Yeah. Anything else you've been consuming?
No, go ahead. Start talking about what you talk about.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing that I really had a chance to watch this week was the original Rocky, and I think at some point we should try to... I don't know, rig the Apple II to maybe give us a Rocky-themed podcast so we can talk
Rocky
about
three.
All of them. What'd you say?
Rocky III only.
See, that's the thing, is like, for me, personally, and I don't know how you are, I don't know how, like, everybody else is, but for me, with the Rocky movies, I have kind of a weird relationship with them in which I almost exclusively watch Rocky III and IV, and that's about it. Like, anytime I watch a Rocky movie, it's going to be one of those two. And I don't know if it's just the characters are so much more dynamic. Like, those relationships are already built between Rocky and Apollo and Mick and everything. And, like, everything's just a little bit more, I don't know, settled in and kind of familiar. But I hadn't seen the original Rocky in years. Like, I think it had been, I don't know, almost 10 years or something since. And I was like,
wow.
You know what? I guess I'm gonna sit down and watch this. So I think I missed, like, the first 15, 20 minutes or something. But I caught the rest of it, and because I've seen Rocky 3 and 4 so many times, those are more of my favorites, just because I'm more familiar with them. But I think the original Rocky has a lot going for it. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that movie came out, I think, let me check just to make sure.
75?
Yeah, 76 maybe.
76. You know, it took them only 28 days to film it.
Really? No, I didn't know that. 1976, 28 days to film. Wow, that's crazy.
You may have to check my figures. It might be 29 days.
No, you're right. Yeah, I'm looking at Wikipedia right now, and that's what it says. It says it was shot on a budget of less than $1 million, which is kind of crazy, too, because it made over $225 million, which is just insane.
it's weird, though, because every Rocky movie I watch, after it's over, I'm like, that's the best one.
Really?
Like, I'll watch Rocky II, which has its ultimate, like, awesome parts.
Yeah.
So by the end of Rocky II, I'm like, that's the best one right there. But then I'll watch Rocky III, and I'm like, well, nope, Clubber Lang, he adds to the mix. That's the best one. And Rocky IV, you got Ivan Drago and the robot, Polly's robot, and you're like, oh, that's the best one. But then you watch Rocky V, and you're like, IV is still the best.
Yeah.
But then you watch Rocky Balboa, and you're like, this might be better than some of the original ones.
Yeah, we need to watch all of them and talk about that on a podcast, because I think that would be a lot of fun. So just kind of concentrating on this original one, and again, not talking enough about it, so we'll ruin future conversations. I think it – what'd you say?
Save it for the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I think – I don't know. It definitely has a lot going for it. It's so much more of a – like a personal story than the rest of them, I think. Like, he doesn't – it's all about Rocky, and it's so much more of a character study of him than the hype that surrounds it, because the hype isn't even really there in the first one. You know, it's all – whatever hype is there is generated by Apollo, and there's not very much. It's all – it comes to the forefront at the very end in the fight, which there aren't very many fights in the original Rocky. In the other ones, I feel like, you know, there's more over the course of the movie, and there's, like, you know, ups and downs and pitfalls that they have to go through that are represented by these boxing matches throughout the films. And in the original Rocky, it's like, it's all character stuff really leading up to this one big battle with Apollo at the end.
Yeah, I think Stallone has gone on record, or this may be me, and he'd agree with me, I'm sure. It's not a boxing movie. It's not a sports movie. It's a movie about this guy named Rocky, you know, about his life, his loves, his time in the streets, his failure to kind of, you know, get educated the way everybody else may be advanced as far as learning how to read or learning how to talk or whatever, and just kind of him overcoming all these barriers that have been put in front of him to kind of achieve the ultimate goal, which I guess is the whole point of the movie.
And, like, okay, spoiler alert for Rocky, if anybody's never seen that, just, I know, this is ridiculous.
Turn it off now!
Like, the thing that, you know, like, I love the movie because he doesn't win, you know? Like, that's the... It's not realistic to assume that he's going to win in a fight like this. He's not a professional, whatever. It's not like a real – it's not so much of a fairy tale story that it's unbelievable because of the ending. And because he doesn't win, and because they set it up really perfectly a couple scenes before the fight where he's laying there in a bed with Adrian, and he, like, he goes out to the arena – by himself and just stands there and, like, looks at these huge posters, these banners that have been put up of him and Apollo kind of facing off. And he comes back to his apartment and Adrian's laying there in bed and he's like, you know what, I don't think I can win this. And she's like, well, what are we going to do? And he's like, you know what, I don't even care about winning. I just want to go the distance. I, like, nobody's gone the distance with him. Nobody's gone all 15 rounds, whatever. If I can do that, then I'll prove that I'm not just another bum off the streets and stuff. And I think that is, like, the absolute heart of the movie, and that's why it doesn't really matter that he doesn't win in the end, because the whole thing, like we said, is more of this kind of character piece, and it's really about him and his relationship with Adrian. And as long as he wins in that, then he wins in life, if you will. So hopefully, like I said, maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that in kind of an upcoming episode, but just wanted to touch on that.
Remember, Ben, there ain't going to be no rematch.
Yes, there ain't going to be no rematch.
Ain't going to be no rematch.
Which is ironic, of course, because that's all Rocky II is a rematch. But all right, so we've done it. Let's go ahead and get this over with. Let's talk about Lawrence of Arabia.
Peter O'Toole as Lawrence of Arabia. What was he really like? This controversial figure who became a legend in his own lifetime.
He was the most extraordinary man I ever knew.
He was a very great man.
He was a poet, a scholar, and a mighty warrior. He was also the most shameless exhibitionist since Barnum and Bailey.
What, in your opinion, did these people hope to gain from this war?
They hope to gain their freedom.
There's one born every minute.
They're going to get it, Mr. Bentley. I'm going to give it to them.
Come on, come on.
and the radio. Together, they made history. Now, a gathering of international stars unfolds the story. Alec Guinness as Prince Faisal.
The English have a great hunger for desolate places. I fear they hunger for Arabia.
Anthony Quinn as Auda Abu Taihi.
I carry 23 great wounds, all got in battle. 75 men have I killed with my own hands in battle. I scatter, I burn my enemies' tents. I take away their flocks and herds. The Turks pay me a golden treasure, yet I am poor. Because I am a river to my people.
All right, Lawrence of Arabia is a 1962 British film directed by David Lean. I know, you're snoring already. Why don't you go ahead and tell me, you have some sort of list prepared, right?
Yeah, we can save that till the end of the review.
Okay, but, okay.
Yeah, I can give you my initial thoughts of Lawrence of Arabia, Ben.
Okay, hang on one second. Just for people who don't know, because I'm assuming a lot of people didn't watch this, considering it's almost 4 hours long. The movie stars Peter O'Toole as T.E. Lawrence, and all right, never mind. Yeah, I'm not even giving people background on this. You can go ahead, Tyler. What did you think about this movie?
Yeah, Lawrence of Arabia, also, as I like to call it, walking the movie.
Mm-hmm.
See a T.E. Lawrence, who is a soldier in the British military during, I don't know, the 1920s?
Yeah.
19-teens. Yep. I was going to do some research beforehand about this time in history, but the movie kind of went on for too long, and I reached a catatonic state cinematically where I just didn't care for anything.
Mm-hmm.
A couple hours following this.
Mm-hmm.
But he goes to, I assume, Arabia.
Yep.
And helps out Prince Faisal, played by Alec Guinness, who you may be more familiar with as Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Star Wars original trilogy.
Indeed.
And from that point, I really don't know what the heck is going on, because he kind of breaks away from Faisal,
uh-huh.
And he has like his own group of men, and then he meets up with another tribe of Arabians, and then they travel with him. And then it just ends after 3 hours and 47 minutes, which surprisingly, I didn't really feel the length of the movie. Like, I checked my timestamp at one point and I was like, oh wow, only an hour left. That's not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it just ends like, okay, this is what the ending to this epic movie is going to be, like this.
Yeah, we can go ahead and say what that is if you want, because we're in spoiler territory. So.
Yeah, well, go ahead and give us your initial thoughts.
Okay. I didn't like the movie. Just in short, I didn't like it very much at all. I thought it was incredibly long, like unnecessarily long and drawn out, like just almost for the sake of being long and drawn out. I thought you definitely could have told this story in a normal two and a half hour movie easily. There was almost no, I don't really know why they decided to make it super long.
Yeah, I mean, there could be a bunch of reasons for that, but keep going.
Yeah. I think walking the movie, your added title, is pretty apt, especially for the first like 2 hours of it, because that's really what happens. It's just like a lot of people in the desert just kind of moving slowly, a lot of trudging and just kind of mirage imagery and stuff, like things that are really, really small in the distance, like slowly coming into frame and things, and a lot of like heat coming off of the ground. And it's like not a lot happens in the first 2 hours of it, I think, but then the final 2 hours, a lot of stuff does start happening, but it's almost like they had lost me and I didn't really care about it. You know, there's like at about the halfway point, there's like these train explosions and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's all these kind of cool scenes where he starts blowing up trains and
for whatever reason.
People were raiding and all this. And yeah, kind of like you said, I don't really know the extent of like why Lawrence was doing the things that he was doing, because it was kind of, I don't know, I felt like, and maybe this is just me, I felt like it was really unclear about his motivations and like what politically was really going on and that this is something that Pat and I discussed very briefly because he happened to watch the movie as well. And I know he for longtime listeners, Pat was hosting with us in the beginning, and he's had to take a kind of leave of absence, yeah, for a little while. But we were talking a little bit about it, and he was kind of right there with me saying that, like, I don't really know about the political, like, what they were really trying to do. He kind of posited that they didn't dumb it down enough for people who didn't know what was going on at the time, and that's kind of how I felt, like.
Or future moviegoers.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's, like, a ridiculous thing. You shouldn't have to, as a filmmaker, you shouldn't have to dumb down your product based on what future generations are going to do. You know, I'm not implying that, but I just mean I had, like, almost no context for what was actually happening historically at that time or what was really going on here, so it was just kind of a little bit hard for me to follow, and then, you know, pair that with the fact that it goes on for freaking 3 hours and 48 minutes. It's just like, that's a long time to be unaware of the specifics of what's happening, you know?
Yeah. From what I could gather, I mean, there was the British Army who was somehow involved in this Arabian War, and it was the Arabs versus the Turks.
Mm-hmm.
The Turks were trying to kind of invade Saudi Arabia, and there were all these uncooperative tribes in Arabia that were working against each other while also trying to weed out the Turks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of what was going on. That's from what I got on the film. I wanted to go and research it, but I didn't get a chance to.
I think
so.
You're right.
Like, based on what the film was trying to tell me. And there were all these little tribes, like in Lawrence's case, he had two leaders of two different tribes kind of warring against each other the entire film. Sharif and the other guy that they dine with in the big tents towards the middle of the film. And but I just don't understand, because I thought he was going to meet back up with Prince Fasil, Alec Guinness' character, later in the movie, but he doesn't come in until the very, very end. So it's just him and like 50 guys and then whatever the other amount of tribesmen that he meets up with for the entire film. And they somehow basically beat back the Turks, which are these they're basically outnumbered for most of the film.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unrealistic if you look at it that way.
Yeah. I think a couple things that need to be said as far as positives for the movie are the two things that are like the clear standouts to me are, one, the cinematography, and two, the score. The musical score was just awesome. Like, you know, that I feel like I was actually looking this up to
define a generation, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think let's go ahead and we'll play a little clip of it. You guys see if you've recognized this from any sort of media or anything. Here we go. Let's play a little clip.
Recognize that music right away as like this Arabian themed epic, and that's basically what it is, but it's just so much to take in.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I was looking up the score and stuff, and it's been, you know, referenced a bunch of times, and they even played it in Spaceballs when the characters are, like, walking through the desert and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it was also used in Troy, the movie Troy from 2004, which also starred Peter O'Toole. So there's a lot of, a lot of these epic
things
and stuff. Kind of, yeah, exactly. There you go. Is that meta? Another callback to a previous podcast episode. So I thought the score was great, even though it really was just that same kind of orchestral thing over and over and over again. It was so good that it made it okay in my mind.
Yeah, the music was interesting because that's how movies kind of used to be. Like, instead of today where we have like commercials and ads and billboards and trivia questions and that sort of stuff as we sit waiting for the movie to start, you know, there used to be overtures to the theme of the movie as you came in, as you sat down, as you, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
There would be this epic music playing, and then they would, if it was a really long movie like Lawrence of Arabia, there would be an intermission where they would splice the movie, play some music, you go to the use the restroom, get whatever, and you know, call on your 1920s telephone, say you're, hey lady, I'm going to be late today because I have a two-hour movie to, and then they would continue the movie. Even up until, I guess, 1978 when they did Star Trek the Motion Picture, that had an overture as well, so they were still doing it up well into the late 70s.
Okay.
From what I know. So, you know, it was just kind of the thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they should bring that back. I mean, when I go and see, like, Transformers or something, Transformers 3, I think it'd be kind of cool to walk into some of the Transformers music.
As yeah. opposed
to, like, you know, Dr. Phil's dentist office, you know, just three blocks from the Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, it was actually great because when I saw Inception last year, they were doing that. They played it. I saw it at the Arclight Theater here in Los Angeles, and they had Hans Zimmer's score playing in the theater before the movie started. I was like, man, this is so amazing. It's like getting me so hyped for this movie already. I mean, I was like at a fever pitch at that point anyway. But
yeah, I would guess Hollywood has a better they take care of cinematic history than like an AMC or a.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, some other chain.
Yeah.
So with the cinematography, like the way that I watched this movie, I actually saw the first half of it on a laptop and then saw the second, the last 2 hours or whatever on my big screen TV, which is like, I don't know, almost 50 inches or something. So like the difference between screen size between watching it on a laptop, like this is not a movie to watch on an iPhone or a laptop or something, you know, it's like, it's designed for, I think it was shot in like 70 millimeter or something, which was huge even for the day, if I know anything about this, which I'm not really claiming to.
which I don't.
but I think like this is one of those movies where they'll bust out like a real print, an original print of it and actually play it in theaters around LA and you know some of the bigger metropolitan areas sometimes and just like people will just go and kind of marvel at how they used to make movies because it was shot on such big, like it was like almost like an IMAX before there was an IMAX type of thing,
right?
And you know, watching, like, it just doesn't translate very well, especially the first half of this movie, which is, you know, it's my fault for watching it on a laptop, but I kind of had to based on the scenario I was in, but especially the first half of the movie, that's the worst part of this movie to watch on a laptop, because like we were saying, it's a lot of people really tiny in the distance and coming up and all this stuff, and it's like all of that is completely and utterly lost in translation when you can't really even see what's going on because you got a freaking small computer monitor. So for me, the first half of the movie, story-wise, okay, whatever, it's fine, kind of a little boring, whatever. I think I dozed off for a couple minutes and then rewound and caught back up and all that stuff. And then when I got home and watched the second half on my TV, I was like, oh, okay, this is more like in line with what the movie is supposed to be. This is how it's supposed to, you know, kind of be seen, or a little, at least improved from my previous, my viewing of the first half. So I don't know. What did you think about just the cinematography and stuff in it?
Well, I mean, wasn't there an era of films that it was kind of past the 1940s, but right before like the gritty late 70s, or late 60s, early 70s film where there were just these epics like Cleopatra.
Mm-hmm. It was right in this time. It was in
these
the 60s.
Really million-dollar movies that were just kind of like, this is what you did on the weekend. This is what you did on a Friday night was go watch these huge epics.
Yeah.
The Ten Commandments, you know, these big movies.
From what I remember from like my college classes and stuff on it, it was because the rise of TV happened in like the mid-50s and theaters were trying to compete with now the fact that people were starting to get televisions in their houses and staying home and watching things. It's kind of like what the 3D movement is doing today. It's like trying to get people out of their houses to come back and really kind of experience this lavish spectacle in the theater and like get
just make theater tickets free. That's all you gotta do.
Oh, it's no big deal. Just completely revolutionize the entire industry. No problem. Just go ahead.
No, you just gotta make movies free, man. Make enough money.
Get off your drugs, you hippie.
No, you're the one that wrote the article on it. Don't call me a hippie.
I didn't write an article on this.
No, you wrote an article on why movies should be free.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I remember. Yeah, you can find that at, what, notjustnewmovies.com? You can, yeah, that
That's
was
exactly where you can find it, Ben.
That was a long time ago. Sorry.
Have your views changed?
No.
Think movies should still be $15 a ticket?
I don't know. It just, I mean, if you make, this is getting off into a rabbit, like a side trail here, a tangent.
We need it.
If you make movies free, then people who work in the entertainment industry are not making any money, basically. And
but
I'm not...
No, theaters would be providing it for free. The people who made the movies would be making the money off of the film that's being bought by the cinema outlets, right?
Right, yeah.
Isn't that
I think
the article was about? And then they make more money based on concession sales than
yeah.
they do with the films anyway.
Yeah, that's actually true. You know, you're bringing up some good points that I brought up years ago, and I'm not currently up to date on these points, so I can't refute them right now.
Well, let's return back to A Lawrence Arabian and speak about it another time. How about that?
Fair enough, fair enough.
When you're better prepared.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want you just to verbally own me on this podcast right now. Okay, so let's talk.
Page would once say, "I do not do a battle of wits with an unarmed man."
Ooh, ow. Okay. Let's talk performances. What did you think about, you know, Peter O'Toole specifically as the main character?
He was a lunatic. I mean, his character, I mean, it was well acted, don't get me wrong, but the character himself was insane. He was almost bordering a serial killer because, serial killer / mentally handicapped in some aspects because, you know, he doesn't really understand what the heck's going on. He falls in love with Saudi Arabia, which is easy to understand because it's mm-hmm. beautiful, whatever. But then he executes the man at one point
mm-hmm.
to appease both sides of the tribe.
Yeah, which we should mention was the dude that he ended up, like, going back for. Yeah. Like, they made this huge deal about him kind of going against the will of the tribe and really kind of, you know, showing this extreme bravery and going back all by himself and, like, rescuing this dude. And then that's the guy that, ironically, he has to kill. But go ahead.
Yeah, and then he ends up having to execute him just to make sure that there isn't more bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was well done, that scene, because, you know, you could hear the guy trying to get away
mm-hmm.
and still shooting him. But then, like, as the movie goes on, you kind of feel less and less attached to Lawrence because he's kind of bordering on insanity
mm-hmm.
as far as him going back and then coming back to Arabia. He wants to join the military, but then he wants to come back, kill all these people, and then he slaughters Turks that are pretty much at the end of their rope as far as what they've done. You know, they were tired, and he attacked them anyway, even though the leaders of the tribes were saying, we probably could take these guys without having to slaughter them, but Lawrence slaughters them anyway.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird way to basically change the character from this innocent who believes in freedom for the Arabian people and trying to accomplish that to some type of crazed maniac who loves slaughtering people.
Mm.
And he kind of just enters back into British society and ends up getting into an accident.
Yeah, which we should say really quickly, like, the opening scene is just ridiculous. It's him riding at, like, really high speeds on a motorcycle, and he just, like, these kids come out, or people come out in a bike, and he just, like, loses control and
yeah.
ramps off and then dies.
Yeah.
And then the movie is just told, like, in kind of flashbacks. Like, it almost reminds me a little
bit
of, like...
They don't flash forward at the end. So.
Yeah, exactly. It reminds me a little bit of, like, Citizen Kane in that regard, because it kind of opens with his death, and then there's these reporters and people, like, trying to figure out what's going on, and then most of the movie is just kind of flashbacks of his life. But yeah, like you said, it's like the book opens, but it never closes at the end,
yeah.
you know? It doesn't really... It's like how you were talking a long time ago back in Van Damme December about that movie The Quest, where
yeah.
like, at the very end, like, a book closes, and it's just like,
wait,
what is going on?
Wait, are they reading the story about a guy in the bar having a flashback? What is going on here?
Yeah, it just didn't really make sense.
No, there is I think there was a made-for-TV movie sequel to this film.
To Lawrence of Arabia?
Yeah.
Really? I did not know
that. You go ahead and give us your thoughts on... the actors and the characters while I kind of research this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I thought Peter O'Toole was good. I didn't, you know, I don't know. I guess I haven't, I'm not really, the 1960s in general is not a period in film history that I'm really fluent in. You know, I haven't seen, this is the only movie directed by David Lean that I've ever seen. And his filmography consists of, you know, Great Expectations, Oliver Twist, Bridge on the River Kwai, Dr. Zhivago, a lot of, you know, these kind of seemingly classic movies that I'd never seen. And, you know, Lawrence of Arabia is obviously among that list. Apparently, Lawrence of Arabia is, like, widely considered to be one of the best movies ever made, and I just don't see what the... I don't see the appeal there. I understand cinematically it looks great. Again, we talked about the score and how awesome that is. The performances, I think, obviously add to that, because I think Peter O'Toole did a good job of showing this kind of descent into madness and how he starts out as like a relatively, I mean, he's a little weird, you know, like he does the match thing in the beginning and he's like got this attitude and he's just kind of like a, he's like, he's got this kind of like badassery to him, but he's also like strangely effeminate at times. And right. Like what is going on with this guy? Like I think O'Toole did a really good job of kind of making us as the audience kind of question like what really is his deal, basically. And then
let's not forget that Lawrence is a real character.
The whole thing is based on a real guy, but I know almost nothing about that real story, so I'm not really going to try to even speak to that.
Sure.
But Alec Guinness, I thought, like, I haven't seen Alec Guinness in a lot of other things except for the Star Wars movies, so it's really hard for me to separate him from that role. I think I was like, okay, he's a guy in a robe and a beard. Okay, it's Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, like, he doesn't do, even though he's supposed to be Arab in this movie, he doesn't really do a lot to, like, try to adopt a legitimate accent or really separate himself in that way. I mean, they probably put some bronzer on him or something, and that's about it. And it's very clearly a British guy trying to be Arab, and I'm like, this just really isn't working if you're going for realism here. But he's a fine actor, like, whatever, he delivers his lines well, he's a good character, he gets the point across, all that kind of stuff. But if you're looking for realism, that's like Jake Gyllenhaal as the Prince of Persia, you know what I mean?
Right. Interesting, because that's what I was thinking about. I was like, how many certified Arabians or people from the Middle East are actually in this movie? Because, you know, it was a production of, you know, Britain, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how many... And they filmed it, I guess it was in Morocco and...
I think Spain at some points, right?
It said at the very end they filmed it in Morocco, and I don't think it was Egypt. No, it was Jordan. They filmed it in Jordan and Morocco.
Okay.
So I don't know how many Arabians they actually had on set. They might have had Middle Easterners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was just kind of another question that I was like, oh, I wonder how many real Turkish people they had, or how many Arabians they actually had.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of them were just, you know, British guys, English guys, English actors as these British or these Arabian characters.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing about O'Toole is, like, I was kind of looking up some of the movie after I watched it and, like, trying to read, like, what the big deal is about this movie and why it's so widely acclaimed and all this stuff. And I was reading a couple reviews and things from back then and people kind of writing things about it now. And one of the things that I guess historical, like, scholars and stuff are still kind of arguing about is its accuracy as far as depicting the sexuality of Lawrence. Like, it's kind of unknown whether or not he was homosexual. Not that that really matters too much in, like, a societal way, but just in this movie, it's like, you know, it was made in the 60s, so of course they're not really going to be as open about something like that as they would be now, you know. So they tried if that's in fact what they were trying to do, they kind of throw in these little things that, like, maybe make you question what's going on. Like, he adopts these two kind of servant boys out of nowhere, and it's kind of like they've got a little weird vibe going on. And then those scenes that I was talking about where he's prancing around on top of the wreckage of a train, you know, taking pictures with this photographer who had been sent out from Chicago, and he's like, that's my baby, like, that's my boy, you know, like, doing all these weird kind of, like, photo shooty stuff, and he's like striking these poses on here, and he's like flipping his little robe around and everything. So like there's a lot of kind of stuff that's just under the surface that you can kind of read into if you want, but you don't necessarily have to, which I thought they did a good job of. And again, that's probably not by choice. That's probably by necessity from the time that the movie was made. Regardless, I thought O'Toole did a good job kind of with that kind of duality, you know?
Yeah. The only instance I kind of felt that at all was right at the very end where Sharif said he was weeping for Lawrence because he loved him, but I assume that was love for a brother as opposed right. to actual lover. That was the only real instance. The other points he brought up, I kind of didn't notice that just because I thought it was, you know, that was just kind of
yeah. And he
how
is
things
like,
were how things were interpreted in the '60s. You know, he just, you know, he didn't really think when I watch films from, you know, earlier eras, I try to sift away the ideas I have from today's films just yeah. so I can kind of try to enjoy it as if I was there.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you bring that up because, you know, I wasn't really thinking about that
yeah.
at the time because I just assume, you know, when you watch like show tune movies from the 50s, and, you know, it's like obviously they're all acting gay because they're all dancing and talking really high and all this stuff. But you don't, when you watched it in the 50s, you were like, oh, Singing in the Rain. Yeah, that's a legitimately good song, man. He really dances in that rain.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. I was just kind of trying. I'm.
No, I know. I understand.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, is there anything else in particular that you really wanted to kind of bring up about this? Because I, like, for me, the story just didn't necessarily do it for me, you know? Like, I was like, okay, this is really long and drawn out. I really think you could have done this in a normal time frame of a movie. That said, I didn't hate the movie. Like,
Right.
I don't know. I kind of did just because I resented it more. I resented the movie more than I hated it. Well, let's put right. it that way. I thought it was unnecessarily long, and I thought that it could have cut out, like, huge chunks of the movie and just been just as effective as a film. I think if I would have stopped watching it for 30 minutes in the middle and then just picked up later, I would have gotten the same exact, almost the same experience, you know, that I would have otherwise, because they were kind of so unclear about the political aspirations and the motivations of all these characters and what was going on. And like they didn't really do that great of a job in my mind of separating the kind of, the different tribes and stuff and what was going yeah. on there, and like really detailing what was happening. And, you know, one of the other things that Pat said that I thought was kind of funny was he was saying that, like, right after the intermission, he was like, man, this would be like Lawrence of Arabia Part 2 in today's world, you know,
yeah.
the films and stuff. And I was actually thinking that would be Part 1, like the second half would be Part 1, and then they would go back and do the prequel of, you know, the first yeah. part. Like, that's probably how it would go down. But I don't know. Is there anything else that you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to go over, not really. I just wanted to kind of go with the awards that it had won. It won 7 Academy Awards.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy to me.
But yeah, like you were saying, I mean, if they had less huge spanning cuts and more story, yes, that would have been better storylines. But then I think we might have missed out on that cinematography, that epic,
mm-hmm.
that epic, you know, 70 millimeter shots of the desert and all these great orchestral movements and stuff. You know, it's either, I think they did it, I guess, a good enough job to win 7 Academy Awards to melding both trying to get the landscape of Arabia and trying to tell the story almost non-verbally for most of the movie.
Yeah.
And then also trying to tell this political, military, personal story of Lawrence and the British Army and the tribes of Arabia.
Mm.
But yeah, the Academy Awards, it won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, Best Music Score, Best Film Editing, and Best Sound. Now, I don't know what it was up against in 1962, but
mm-hmm.
I could probably agree with all of those, considering, you know, it probably was like the best picture of that time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard for us to say, oh, this wasn't great, because we've seen all these epic movies after 1962.
Ooh, you know what? I'm just looking at what it was up against. To Kill a Mockingbird was nominated for Best Picture that year. Man. That would have probably been
a lot like Wizard of Oz, Gone with the Wind in 1939.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Two movies that probably could have won it. Yeah. What else was it up against?
The Longest Day, The Music Man, and Mutiny on the Bounty, which I've heard of The Music Man, but I haven't heard of the other two.
I forgot his name. Who was the guy that plays Robin Hood?
Errol Flynn.
Was Errol Flynn in that movie?
Which one?
Out of the Bounty.
Mutiny on the Bounty.
Yeah.
No, Marlon Brando.
Okay. But yeah, I mean,
I think Errol Flynn might have passed away at that point. This was 1962. This is pretty late in the game.
That guy was mad. But you know, best cinematography, best art direction, best score, definitely. Film editing. I mean, I don't really have a complaint about the editing. Best sound. Yeah, sure, the sound's great. And I understand. You know, I have to watch all five of those movies.
Yeah, to really be able to.
Yeah, to really say, oh, this is not the best picture, or this isn't the best director. But you know, I would say for 1962, I guess this was like the best movie of the year, and probably to some the best movie ever made.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can, like, Steven Spielberg considers this his favorite film of all time, and
right.
You know,
can't argue with him.
It's tough to argue with Spielberg, but I think as a director, you can get a lot more appreciation out of this movie if you look at it from a kind of a directorial standpoint of what David Lean was actually able to accomplish. I mean, you know, obviously, 1962, they weren't really making huge epic movies on this kind of scale before. Even something like Cleopatra, I don't think reaches the – which Cleopatra was like widely – considered one of the biggest box office bombs of all time is because they spent so much money on this super lavish set and production design and all this crazy stuff they were doing. But even that kind of pales in comparison to these really kind of spanning vistas and stuff that they were able to capture in Lawrence of Arabia. And it's really kind of a directorial marvel more than a good movie, I think. I think it just, like, you look at the scene where they kind of take Aqaba, I think is how you say it. I always thought that they were saying Agrabah, like
from Aladdin.
In Aladdin, yeah. But you know, that scene where they kind of everybody just is riding through the city, and it's all in this one really long continuous shot, and the camera just pans over to the right. You remember what I'm talking about? It's like up on kind of a mountainside or something, looking down on all these people just riding all the way through, and like that's kind of a really impressive thing, because you know that's not CG, because it didn't exist really in that form yet, and they just really, like, they had to lock down that entire city, basically, and make sure everybody knew where they were supposed to be. It's kind of like it's more of a technical, this whole movie, I think, is more of a technical accomplishment than a storytelling accomplishment. So, you know, if we're judging it by that, I mean, yeah, like you said, that these technical awards and stuff, of course, yeah, I mean, you can't give best cinematography to anything else in that year, you know.
All the nice things we're saying, I don't really want to read my list of things I'd rather do than watch Lawrence of Arabia.
Well, no, listen, we have. To be honest, I'm surprised with the way that you and I have been talking about this, because I was expecting us both to kind of just rip into it. But the more that we've sat around here and talked about it, I think we both have kind of maybe even – I don't know. Speaking for myself,
we've realized something.
Yeah, I've got more of an appreciation for it now than I did before we started this podcast, because I was just kind of like, oh, God, this movie. I mean, it's so freaking long, blah, blah, blah. But and now that we've actually started talking about it, I do appreciate it a little bit more. But no, I'm not saying – like I understand that a lot of our listeners probably haven't seen this movie, and I understand why, because it's freaking ridiculously long, and it's like not something that audiences today are comfortable with doing. Like, just with the way that people are busy today, you're like, who has time to sit down for 4 hours and watch one movie that doesn't affect your life, really? You know, like it's kind of ludicrous. But so go ahead. You had this list, right? And this is,
Before we discussed it, I was kind of angry at the fact that it ate up 4 hours of my day. But now I feel kind of bad that I have all these lists of things I'd rather do than watch Lawrence of Arabia. But you know, for entertainment purposes, I will go into it.
There we go.
For you, Ben. number one, actual torture in a Turkish prison. I'd probably rather doing. Number two, a sponge bath with 40 Arabian men, and instead of a sponge, it's a rock, and instead of water, it's bleach. So another thing that previous Tyler would probably rather do. Number three, reading 1001 Arabian Nights in its original Arabic on a bed of pins. So you can kind of assume how long that would take me to do whilst lying on a bed of pins.
Right.
Number four, taking a catapult to the face as Christina Aguilera sings the Star Spangled Banner. Now that's kind of a recent reference. If you haven't watched the Super Bowl, you can know how terrible it is to listen to our national anthem being hacked away by a artist that hasn't been popular in like 12 years.
People who listen to this like 5 years from now are going to be like, Christina Aguilera, what? What's going on?
Oh, he's taking a catapult to the face. That hurts. And then finally, and I added this just recently, getting drunk with Rip Taylor at a Justin Bieber concert. I'd rather do that than watch Lawrence of Arabia. Although some of those are pretty harsh now that we've kind of dealt with our problems with the movie and kind of opened ourselves to it. But
to be fair, though, I think I would rather get drunk with Rip Taylor at a Justin Bieber concert over doing a lot of other things in life, because that actually sounds like a lot of fun.
Do you know who Rip Taylor is? Guy that throws confetti, he has fake hair.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Rip Torn. I'm sorry.
No. See, I wanted to say Rip Torn, but then I was like, yeah, that'd actually be kind of fun. But Rip Taylor is the one that he's kind of flamboyant.
Rip Taylor, confetti. Hang on, I'm Google imaging. You should go to Google and just type Rip Taylor into Google Images, and you'll see. Well,
to conclude, I wanted to read the synopsis of A Dangerous Man, Lawrence After Arabia, and I think Ben, you'll like this because it stars one of your possibly favorite actors, Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes.
Yes. A Dangerous Man, Lawrence After Arabia, 104 minutes. Thank God. 1990. This made-for-television sequel begins where the legendary film Lawrence of Arabia leaves off. British officer T.E. Lawrence, played by Ralph Fiennes, travels to the Paris Peace Conference with Emir Faisal, the king of Syria, in an effort to win independence for the Arabs. But he soon finds that backroom politics have become more lethal than desert combat because of the recent discovery of the Middle East's vast oil reserves.
Mm.
But of course, this DVD is not currently available.
Right. I don't think I would watch it anyway, to be fair.
With what we learned from Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah. What's that?
It just ends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing's accomplished.
Yeah. Man. Well, that list was really... What's that?
Who would you recommend this film to?
See, that's the thing. It's like, I can't really... I mean, I guess film students and people who are just really kind of looking to expand your cinematic horizons, no pun intended, just kind of, catch up on the class. What's that?
A warning.
Yeah, I mean, like, catch up on the classics and stuff. Like, if you're gonna see this, I can't imagine any other... I can't really imagine a normal, like, a 2011 moviegoer just being like, you know what, I'm gonna watch Lawrence of Arabia today. Let's go ahead and do that. And like, you know, nobody does that. I feel like you watch Lawrence of Arabia for a reason. So I would... If you have a reason to watch it, I would recommend seeing it. Otherwise, I think, you can kind of skip it. It's just so... it does have its moments, as we've said, and you know, it has some good things about it, but I just, there are other better movies, even of the time, I think, that that would better, you can spend your time more wisely watching.
Yeah, if you're like a film historian, this is like one of those movies that you have to watch just to know what people were going to see in 1962, and I mean, that's kind of interesting. To think about, you know, these were the kinds of movies, and this is how people saw movies and cinema. And,
yeah.
You know, the kind of stories they were telling when there wasn't the internet, there wasn't fake, there wasn't, you know, these kinds of things where we're kind of obsessed with. There weren't Adam Sandler movies. You know, just kind of like, these were the movies that you prepared for. You said, okay, we're going to the movies this week, and we're going to see Lawrence of Arabia. It's nominated for these many awards, and it was probably the only movie at the theater, you know?
Yeah.
I don't...
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I like to consider us amateur film historians, so hence the reason that we watched this movie. So,
1962, I would have gone back and watched Dr. No, the first James Bond movie.
There you go. I think I would have been right there with you.
History accomplished.
All right.
Can we wrap this one up?
Yeah, I mean, I think we pretty much just did, unless you have any other closing thoughts.
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right, so let's rev up the old Apple II and see what we're going to be watching next week.
Oh, no problem. And Ben, I had a bad feeling about it last week. I have a good feeling about it this week.
Okay.
Ben, have you ever heard of the actor Fred Savage?
I have.
Heard of the company Nintendo?
I have, yes.
Oh, well, if you put those two entities together, you get a movie called The Wizard, which, from my knowledge, is about a Nintendo game tournament with Fred Savage involved, who, from what I can tell from the title, is the Wizard.
That sounds like an episode of South Park or something, but I'm in. That sounds good. Let's do it. As if we have any choice. I'm pretty sure the Apple II.
Apple II knows all.
It would hunt us down and kill us if we didn't watch
it. It wanted us to understand Lawrence of Arabia for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we're going to be watching The Wizard next week, so feel free to check that out. I'm checking right now. I don't think that's actually available on Netflix Watch Instant, but it is available on the DVD portion. So if you guys want to throw that in your queue, move that to number one, and you'll be able to check out The Wizard with us. You guys can always send us an email at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of The Wizard or of Lawrence of Arabia, if you're one of the brave souls to actually watch that, or any of the other, you know, movies that we've talked about on this podcast. You can also call and leave us a voicemail, which I would highly recommend. Otherwise, Tyler's going to start doing other celebrity impressions and stuff. You can do that at 904-469-6566. So we also have a new Twitter page, or relatively new. So you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. And we do have a few new Twitter followers this week. So at Doggy's House, thanks for the follow, and also at Wendy Shepherd. So we appreciate that.
Hey, Wendy.
Yes, indeed. All right, so you guys can also track us down on Facebook if you could just type in the Not Just New Movies podcast there. Same thing in iTunes. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Leave us a review. If you're listening to this podcast, take 30 seconds and just write a review. I know that you all have iTunes accounts. Everybody does. Don't act like it's going to take you a while to sign in. You know you're already logged in. And let's go ahead and do the finish up with the character name game, Tyler. So what was the character's name for this week?
Well, the character's name this week is Carl Colt.
Carl Colt. Man, yes. I am going to, I'm going to say
the movie this character is in.
Yes. Thank you. I forgot to mention. Yeah. For first time listeners, Carl Colt, I'm trying to guess the movie that this character comes from. And there also has to be some sort of loose tie to a movie that was released in wide release across the country.
Very loose.
This past weekend. Oh God. Yeah. With Tyler, it's, you never know what this connection is actually going to be. So I'm going to say, The Hot Chick.
Ooh. Not even
actually
close.
That doesn't even make any sense, because I was trying to match up with Rob Schneider, and Rob Schneider isn't even in Just Go With It, which is the most recent Adam Sandler movie that just came out this past weekend. Let's see, how about Big Daddy?
Nope.
All right, how about Wanted? Let's go that way.
No.
Okay. I was Romeo and Juliet came out this weekend, I know, so I was looking for a James McAvoy connection there. I've got nothing. So if you want to give me like a some sort of director name or like a year or genre, something that I might be able to latch on to.
I always forget I have to give you hints.
Yeah.
please hold.
Oh yeah, I'm holding. Everybody's holding. We're on the edge of our seats here. I'm not cutting this out.
Hold your cousin. Hold your cousin. Okay, this film that you're trying to guess was made in 2004.
Oh man, that does nothing for me.
Directed by Richard Loncrane.
What? I don't think I've ever heard of that guy. Derailed.
No.
Oh man, I was really hoping that Jennifer Aniston connection.
Movie?
No, Derailed came out in 2004.
Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Where they almost have sex, and you're like, ah.
Yeah, yeah, it was disturbing.
And they immediately get hunted by some type of...
I got nothing. Maybe somebody else who was in it or something? Or
yeah,
like...
I can give you a hint on who was in it.
Okay, let's do that.
Kirsten Dunst.
Kirsten Dunst in 2004? Elizabethtown?
Magnitude, no.
2005. It can't possibly be Spider-Man 2.
No. You want to know who else is in it?
Hang on. Let me try to guess based on Kirsten Dunst. It's not Small Soldiers, I don't think. How about Kirsten Dunst movie? Oh, that one where she plays the queen or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marie Antoinette.
No.
Oh, curses. Okay, go ahead.
You know who else is in it?
No, I don't.
John McEnroe.
John McEnroe, the tennis player? what is it, like Scary Movie 3 or something?
Giving it away. What? No, it's not Scary Movie 3.
Oh, I guess. Yeah, it's Wimbledon, right?
Very good. Wimbledon. John McEnroe is in that as himself. Kirsten Dunst, Paul Bettany stars. And Carl Colt is the brother of Paul Bettany's character, Peter Colt, played by James McAvoy, who voices Nomeo in the recent release, Nomeo and Juliet.
Nicely.
You have been had, sir.
I have. No, that was actually one of the more legitimate connections, believe it or not, to first-time listeners that Tyler has made. So I do appreciate that only being one
go
step.
Go back a couple steps, yeah.
Yeah, one or two steps removed, as opposed to your normal, like, six, which just makes it almost impossible to guess. So nicely done there. All right, so... let's go just back and forth really quickly and tell everybody where people can find more of our work on the internet this week. Tyler, I'll start with you.
Ben, you personally can find me at the Solar Sentinel. You can find me at Destageddon. I mean, these are the places you can find me.
Mm-hmm. And you are also pretty much running our Twitter page, so you can go at NJNM Podcast and kind of get a direct line into Tyler if you want to.
I've been trying to get Jenny Wade to come onto the show. She's been famous for playing the DA in The Good Guys, and The Good Guys has been canceled, so obviously she's not doing anything right now. She needs a couple of months. Have some fun with us. Talk with us. She's very personable. If you go to her YouTube page, she's very funny.
Maybe she'll come on for The Wizard.
I don't know why she wants to ignore us. I include us in the Twitter interaction. So, I mean, Ben, do what you can.
Okay, I'll see what I can do. In the meantime, you guys can track me down on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears, writing occasionally for geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, which is the namesake of this podcast, and you can also find me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. I also am adding one more site to the kind of normal ones that I'm writing for. It's called moviecultists.com. I got some cool guys over there, so I just happen to be kind of picking up basically whatever news stories of like breaking news and movies and stuff and film news and all that doesn't get covered on Geek Tyrant and Filmonic. I'm writing them up for moviecultists.com. So you guys can check them out if you want to. They're also on Twitter and stuff, so check them out.
No more Ben's Daily Movie News.
Ben's Daily Movie News has been decommissioned for going on 2 or 3 years at this point. So
that was such a great idea when we thought of it.
Yeah,
I was like, Ben, not just new movies, but then there can also be just new movies, like movie news. You're like, yeah, and it lasted for like a year and a half, and then it went.
Yeah.
It basically became an RSS feed for your other websites that you were writing for.
Right. So there's a little walk down memory lane. But looking ahead to the future, you guys can check out The Wizard starring Fred Savage. Please do that and check that out. Feel free to email us, leave us a voicemail or anything. Let us know kind of what you think about that. Music for this show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com. They're also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out over there. And Tyler, thanks for joining. This was actually way better than I thought it was going to be completely honest.
I try to do that with all my podcasts, Ben.
I know. You have the high standard of excellence, so thanks for bringing it today.
Just like Lawrence Arabia does.
Indeed. All right, well, thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you guys next week.
Later.